I still want to meet people. I still want to party. So we call it Joy Hour instead of Happy Hour. And then for those that are curious, they keep asking questions. I keep telling them more. I show them my picture, my worst one, and of course my best one now. And I start telling them my story and being vulnerable and open. So my strength has really come, of course, from above. But my strength has also come from telling my story every single day. And some weeks that's 10 people, and some weeks it's 100. But I do everything I can to talk exactly about the pain and what I went through.
Welcome to Inspiring Journeys. I'm Paul Stressner, and alongside me are the incredible Adriana Ferns and the unstoppable
Kerry Nelson.
Hey everyone, it's Adriana here. From a challenging path to becoming a fitness instructor, I've learned that every step counts in the journey to better self.
Hey, what's up everyone? I'm Kerry Nelson, your obstacle course crushing adaptive athlete warrior, Spartan races, major marathons. I'm breaking barriers and redefining what's possible.
And I'm on a mission to run a 5K in every state, shining a spotlight on the charities that make a difference in each community. But on Inspiring Journeys, we're not just about conquering personal goals.
Our podcast is a celebration of resilience, determination, and the transformative power of personal growth. We'll be sharing stories of individuals who have faced challenges head on and emerged stronger.
Yeah, you know, life is a series of obstacles, and I've learned to turn them into stepping stones. Let's inspire others to do the same.
That's right. And it's not just about our awesome guest stories. It's about yours, too. We want to ignite that spark within you, encouraging every listener to embark on their unique and inspiring journey.
So get ready to lace up your shoes, break down those walls, and join us each week as we explore the extraordinary paths that lead to growth, triumph, and ultimately an inspiring life.
This is Inspiring Journeys. Let's run, climb, and soar together.
Hey, everybody. We're back for another episode. And we'll start off once again with our gratitude list. So, Kerry, you want to start off? What you're grateful for this week?
Sure. I am grateful today to be able to run. There were moments that were really good, and then there were moments that really sucked. And being able to continue and put one foot in front of the other is something that I know a lot of people can't do. There's a lot of people in the world that can't run. There's a lot of people in the world that don't have the opportunity to do that. And so I focused on that today during the hard moments, and that got me through. So I'm grateful for the ability to be able to do the things that I can do.
Especially with everything that you've been through and everything. You know, people want to check back on some past episodes. So yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like there are people in the same situation as me that are definitely not as lucky to be able to do what they can do. So when things get hard and, you know, I'm completely just dogging on myself, I think about the fact that at least you're not in a wheelchair, you can move forward and you can continue to do it. So that's what I'm grateful for.
Yep. And get ready for the Boston. So
Boston, it's coming up.
Yeah,
it is. I was like,
next month.
Coach was like, Nelson, we have to like ramp up the mile. We have to hit some like 18 to 20 mile runs. And I'm like, we've got time. And he's like, no, no, we don't. It's March. Like we, here we go.
Yep. Got to leave some time to taper. So
yeah. Right. Yeah. I'll be training up until the last minute. I can already see it coming.
All right. And then for me, what I'm grateful for, I'm really nostalgic today. I was thinking of my dad. So I'm grateful for the time that I had with him. People who know me know that he passed away in 2021, and last night, well, during the day yesterday, it was really crappy here, and I get these like debilitating headaches, and I wanted to do some writing, and I'm building a website for us and everything, but I just couldn't focus. So I put on the TV. I hardly watch TV, and I watched the show Beecher. Mm-hmm. And that's something my dad totally would have loved. So of course I like thought of him, and yeah, we always watched shows like that. He was like a big Tom Clancy guy. It was like that type of style, and it was fun listening to him predict what was going to happen. He's usually right, and yeah, so I really like thought of him. Yes, he's really came to the forefront of my mind, and it's funny because I hadn't planned on tying that into today's episode, but that'll bring us to today's guest. And I should mention, well, I should, to tie it in, I should also say that my dad was sober for the last 30 plus years of his life. And it's just incredible, like, the turnaround he had. And after he passed away, I got a few private messages from people telling me that he saved their lives. So it still gets to me that all the struggles he went through, everything that he went through in his life, and, you know, and he used it to be able to, like, help people. And yeah, so I'm, like, really proud of him, and it was amazing. And so and that just reminded me of today's guest, who's been sober for 26 months. And out of the ashes of his alcohol and drug addiction, Tom Lyman rose out of the ashes with burning desire to help others by being very vocal with the story and letting others know that they are not alone. Tom started an incredible community event called Joy Hour. And within a few weeks, it went from 30 people to 200 people. So obviously there's a thirst for this. And the Joy Hour has hosted over 70 events and have had 10,000 people come to the event. People come from all over the area and have made deep, meaningful connections and can truly call and lean on each other as needed. And I just think that's so freaking incredible. So I'm proud and honored to introduce you to the inspiring Tom Lyman. All right, Tom, welcome to the show.
And thank you, Paul and Carrie. I'm excited to be on today. And boy, you just right away jumped in with something touching to my heart there about your dad. And mine has not been here for almost 7 years now. And what a lot of memories can go through a person's mind with a lost father, and really anyone, of course. But my heart and my thoughts are with you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's tough as we grow and life goes by that others aren't here with us in person. But I hope you feel him today, and he is with you and in your other ways. And so, yeah, just touched my heart there. But being grateful for these times that we have, and being grateful for today and being on this, you know, I'm thankful for sobriety, and I'm thankful for the doors that it's opened with relationships, and specifically, you know, on the topics of every day's a blessing, and especially whenever I have a clear head. And so, yeah, just excited to be on today, and hopefully this will inspire others to just have those meaningful relationships with family and friends, and never take each other for granted, thinking we always have tomorrow or always have another 10 years. My dad, I thought, had another 30 years, and out of nowhere, colon cancer. And then boom, 3 months later, he wasn't here anymore. And so it taught me a lot watching him those last 3 months. And now I feel like with sobriety in the last 26 months here, I feel like I do maximize each day in each conversation a lot better. I still have room for improvement, but to just say right now, it's Carrie and Paul and I, and we're talking about something, and this is the moment I'm living in. And I hope I have this afternoon and tomorrow, and of course, many, many more years, but I'm thankful for being on today and take it from there.
So thank you so much. Yeah. Yeah. I just feel like it was meant to be. I just happened to catch a comment that you made on a post that Craig Siegel made, and it just really caught my eye. And of course I totally related to that. So it was just like meant to be, I don't know, it just felt like a divine intervention or something like that. That was like, yeah, incredible. I love your story. I love your, you have the podcast, the Joy Hour, and the first episode that you did with your family was just so incredible. I'm gonna have to like share that on here. It's just incredible how open you are, and yeah, it's so important to, you know, for other people deceased to know that it's okay and there's hope. And so I guess we can start with the beginning of your journey. We had spoken earlier, and you work in construction. Yeah, so I guess we could get started with you can tell us about your journey, how you with the drinking and everything, how whatever you feel comfortable talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And definitely a wide open book, and it's helped a lot of that's helped me, and it's helped a lot of others by being open and vulnerable. So I always think, where do I start? You know, I'm 46 years old. As I mentioned, been clean and sober 26 months, almost 27 months now. Went to rehab inpatient and then also outpatient. I do a lot with 12-step programs, behavioral changes programs, both as a student and a few of those as a teacher now. I'm a sponsee and a sponsor, so to speak, but I'm always learning more every day. I've probably digested well over 100 books in the past 26 months. Prior to that, I wasn't much of a reader, but I do read a lot now and do a lot of listen to a lot of podcasts. And actually, you know, I don't think it was an accident that we met. I'm sure we'll be doing more of these discussions, both on and off of the camera. But I was listening to Ed Mylett and Amberly Lago and just loved that episode I listened to there and started listening to more of hers and then came across Craig Siegel. And I think it's interesting the different people that I haven't met in person, of course, but that I feel a connection with in that they have shown and shared vulnerability and transparency. And it's given me a lot of encouragement because in my community, there are times where I hesitated or I hesitate a little to do it thinking, well, what will a family member think of this? Or what will a friend think of? Why am I talking about this so openly and vocally about what I've been through? And so between God confirming to me that I'm on the right course and then inspirational other podcast hosts, yourself and Carrie, of course, I've watched a few of these inspiring journeys. And I think it's really important to, in your own unique way, find opportunities to talk about life experiences, because even if 100 people think, why did they share that? But it saves one life, then it's worth it. And I guess I'll dive into my journey. Also in honor of my friend Dennis, who's no longer here, that really motivated me even more when I had to speak at it. I was asked to speak at his funeral, and he had a lot of life ahead of him. And this was just 7 months ago. Seeing these lives that have the same situation that I was in, but I'm alive. Like, why? Like, I have to focus on the fact that it's a blessing. I'm lucky, however you want to say it, to even still be here with all of the drinking, all of the drugging, all of the times that accidents could have happened when I was driving or overdose, but yet I'm here. So shame on me if I bottle it up and don't talk about it or sweep it under the rug. I am going to talk about it more and more the rest of my entire life so that I can reach the Tom that I used to be, or I can reach the Dennis that I saw no longer here. And my heart goes out to him and his family. He had a 7-year-old son. And so looking at that, you know, I grew up in Bellevue, Washington. Great mom and dad and brother and sister, good upbringing, tiny church school, graduating class of 2, and I was one of them. So there was about 30 or 40 students in the school. I went there my entire life. A great church, great school, wouldn't trade it for anything. At, you know, 16, 17 years old, I dabbled with some marijuana and whatnot. I moved out when I was 17. I graduated and I became a workaholic. So without having sports at school and things like that, I just turned it. I was a framer. I mean, I was an intense framer. 80, 90 hours a week was what I did. Bought a truck, moved out into a house with a friend, big house, turned into a party house. Mm-hmm. And so 18, 19, 20, 21, you know, I worked real hard, got off work, and right away I would smoke weed and eat, sleep, get up and do it again. There was quite a few weekends, though, that because of other things getting brought in the home, I would try them. So acid a few times, cocaine a couple times, alcohol kind of came and went, wasn't really much of a drinker. Meth probably 20, 25 times, all through my late teens, early 20s, mainly marijuana for many years there. And about 22 years old, I asked my dad if I could move home, and he said, well, of course, you know, you could, there's room in the garage. They had a tiny house. And so I said, yeah, that'd be great. So I moved in his garage, and he said, you know, the one thing though that I would like is that you would, you know, come to church and come back with me and your mom and attend church at least once a week. And I said, well, that's a lot of why I want to do this, is I need to get out of the environment I'm in, because the friends that I was with, it was getting real bad, and the drugs were getting worse, and it was not just fun anymore. It was a drug house. And so I moved back home when I was 22. And at that point, God delivered me from every single, cigarettes, marijuana, all of it just stopped. Like in 1 month, it was just done. And I poured myself into a few goals that I had, goals of, saving up to buy my own home. And I bought a little trailer and was kind of in and out of a couple relationships. About 24 years old, I made a commitment. I wrote it down at the beginning of January, New Year's resolutions, that, I was going to focus on saving and by the end of the year, buy a home. And if I did take a vacation at all, it would be to a church convention. And all of a sudden, two of my buddies wanted to do a trip. So we went down to Louisiana, had a great time at a church convention there, went to Texas to see my sister. And I was in the church service there. And not interested in looking for a relationship, was just living the single life. And I kept checking out the piano player, like all through the two-night church service. I'm like, man, I got to talk to her. And I didn't have the courage to do it. And I chickened out. And all of a sudden she's walking towards the bus, because they were part of a singing college group from Jackson, Mississippi. So I'm in Texas visiting my sister. Girl's about to get on, and I say, hey, I got to talk to you. And if I don't say something, I'm going to kick myself the rest of my life. We talked for a couple minutes, and right, 5 minutes, and she had to get on. They were leaving, and I flew home that night. And we dated and talked for 6 months. We got engaged, and 6 months later, we were married. And 21 years later, we're still married.
That's awesome.
So anytime that I've surrendered and not controlled things in my life, it's turned out pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. So then got married 2003, and for 5 years was, of course, still doing construction. I've done construction my whole life for 30 plus years now. And it was my thing. Like when I was 12, 13, every summer, every day off, I was swinging a hammer with Dad. And so that's what I did. But for 5 years there, I was asked and was honored to be the youth leader. So volleyball, basketball, taking kids to the park, grabbing the van and driving kids here and there and everywhere. And of course, teaching a class once a week. And so I was the youth leader for about 5 years in Bellevue, Washington. And then I remember a day where we found out that my wife was pregnant with our first child, and we just had a lot on our plate. My wife's always been the music director, been very engaged in music and ministry. And so I decided, I don't have time to be the youth leader with all these great students. And there's another couple that has more time than I do. And so I passed the torch completely to them. And I focused on my career. I needed to really focus on my career to make more money, I thought. So that moment, now that I look back, was the turning point in a lot of areas of my life that I do wish I wouldn't have completely given up that calling and that that duty, that volunteer work, that service work is so important for me. I think for so many of us to have opportunities to work and do something for others. But nonetheless, I proceeded to build a very successful career financially. Year after year, though, I didn't realize it at the time, but there was a void. And a few years after that, I was working in the yard and went and got gas for the lawnmower and got a Mike's Hard Lemonade and enjoyed it. And then, a few months later, it was a few more. And it was just a gradual increase of Mike's Hard Lemonade turned into IPA. Keep in mind, in my teens and 20s, I really didn't like drinking. I got sick almost every time I did. But this time, I'm in my mid-30s, and that was kind of my thing. Hey, I love doing yard work. Now I'm drinking and having, fun in my yard. I'm not hurting anybody. And then I grabbed some whiskey and I'm really out there doing yard work. I'm pressure washing and air blowing and just that feeling of like intoxication, but I'm not drunk, but I'm not sober. And I remember like there was nothing wrong with it at the time. And so year after year, that did increase. Am I doing all right?
Yes, you're doing definitely, awesome. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Okay.
Like, keep on going.
We're like sucked in.
I'm in it.
Okay. So I'm probably, and at this time we have two children, probably almost. Yeah, we have two at this time. And so I'm a few years into occasionally drinking. Of course, this whole time, construction, church, you know, life's pretty good. You know, multiple good things going. Had part ownership in some apartment buildings, some restaurants, of course, also the construction company. So finances are getting better and better. I'm still working 70 hours a week, doing a lot of side jobs, evenings and weekends. And so then once in a while, you know, I'd work so much on the weekend that I'd miss a church service. Kids and wife would go without me. Not a big deal, but looking back, that was kind of the small habits that started to change in my life. Yeah, all of a sudden, other choices. The alcohol was getting more.
Yeah, once you started going down that road,
it became daily.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And small quantities, but daily. And then came probably the biggest thing that was my secret, and that's being unfaithful to my wife. And man, kind of just rehashing that in my mind right now. Like a lot of things, you know, it was fun at first. And wasn't hurting anybody, right? Because it was Tom doing what Tom wanted to do and nobody knew. But after a few months or so, that guilt and shame really weighed on me a lot. I have a beautiful, wonderful wife, three wonderful children, great job, great life, wonderful community, awesome church. I've got so many good things going for me, but I've got this huge, dark secret of this double life that I'm leading that now is into steroids, gym, a boat, multiple women, cocaine, and I'm just going fast. I'm just running as fast as I can. Every day thinking I'm going to quit. Every day thinking I'm going to tell her. I'm still, much as I can, I'm still hiding it. I'm going to work. People don't know. They think I've had a lot of Red Bull. They think I've had a lot of coffee. They don't know I'm doing a bump every hour. I'm taking a shot of whiskey every hour. Most people don't. Find out later, you know, people are like, well, we suspected, but there's a couple of years there where nobody said anything, nobody asked, and I felt like most people didn't know that I was an active, functional, every day going to work, going to church. I mean, many years where my wife's playing piano, my son's up there playing the bass, they're involved in ministry, and I'm in the bathroom snorting cocaine and coming back out and jumping into worship service like everything's fine and going through the motions. And you know, as it got worse, you see it on my countenance and you can see my picture I posted on social media to let people know kind of, you know, the look, I guess you'd say. And the look that I had, one of my pictures I put on there, and I have it on actually the inside of one of my jackets. I have my before, my under the influence picture and my sober picture. But in that picture, what I see and what I remember is the hardest part was that I couldn't look in my own eyes. I couldn't look in my own soul. And so I could go out in public, and because I'm the business owner, right? I got the boat, the G-Wagon, the money. I mean, I'm fine, folks, and I'm successful, and I can cover it up just fine at any event and all these things. But whenever I was by myself and I looked in the mirror to brush my teeth or to shave or anything at all, I couldn't, and I didn't, and I ran so fast. And for years, every night I would tell myself, you're done. You're going to wake up tomorrow. You're never touching this stuff again. God delivered you when you were 22 years old from everything. He's ready to do it again. And God kept talking to me and he kept reaching for me. I'd be in the shower throwing up and trying to sober up. I'd be, you know, my nose is bleeding. I'd be in the bushes in my own house, hiding and crying and just miserable. There was a Thanksgiving where I could hear my kids playing board games, my wife in there and all my in-laws, and I'm in the bushes high as a kite trying to sober up, and all I do is keep doing more drugs as I'm trying to sober up. It's miserable, just just the depth of despair and no hope that it took me to, and thinking I'm going to die. Like I can't keep drinking and driving every day. I can't keep snorting stuff that I'm buying from people that I don't even know what's in it. And I know this, and it's like, I'm running so fast that I'm going to die. I'm going to get a divorce. I'm going to die, one or the other or both. And every morning.
I have a question about when you were using at work, were you like in, you were running the business, or were you in the office, or were you actually like doing construction while you were under the influence?
Yeah, no, great question. Both. Most of my career, it's been both. So, you know, estimating for a day, doing a networking event for a day, and then swinging a hammer for a week, or sometimes swinging a hammer for 3 or 4 weeks in a row, and then doing estimating. So as an owner, it's kind of go where the need is. There's days where I'm driving an excavator. There's days where I'm up on the third floor of a house rolling trusses. And there's days where I'm at a networking event. But, you know, being an addict, I knew how to, for the most part, measure out the timing and the quantity of meetings. And a lot of times, though, as it got worse, I'd have to cancel them. So if I had an early morning meeting, I was good. I could cover that one up, no problem. But if it was later in the day, like 3, 2, 3, 4 o'clock, a lot of times right before I was supposed to meet a client or someone, I'd cancel it with some lame excuse, because I then would look at myself and go, no, you're obviously too high. They're going to know. They're going to know. So I'd try and schedule meetings in the morning. And then, yeah, when I'm out there framing and doing demo, and, you know, it's my world. I mean, I did it when I was 8 years old. I mean, I could do it high and drunk and nobody knew. So I'd say about 70% of the time was probably on a job site.
Yeah. That and high functioning, like, ability, like, it's intriguing how I've had like addiction in my past, and my mom had major addiction when we were younger, and it always fascinated is probably the wrong word to use, but just how your body and mind are able to adapt to being able to function normally in front of everybody and do the tasks that you would typically do, and there's not a blip in it, and you can maintain that for years and years and years until eventually what happens, right? Like, there's always that catalyst, that point where things just start to crack and crumble and fall and everything, like what you're saying with, you know, not being able to do anything in the afternoon. But it's interesting how you're able to, your mind and your body is able to adapt to those things so that you can continue to function. And I think that plays into, at least for me, played into like, oh, like, I'm fine. Like, I can go ahead and do this, and I can continue doing what I'm doing, or just a little bit more. And like, it spirals.
Yeah. And with myself, and most, addicts, and two things I want to say here. First, I struggle with the addict thing. I say it more like, I'm Tom. I'm in recovery from a lot of addictions, and every day I have a choice. Just my personal way of saying it. But, hey, I'm addicted to, being a good dad now. I'm addicted to, you know, my relationship with God. I'm addicted to reading, you know. So the word addict is an interesting one. We could dive into at any point and have fun conversations. But the point I was going there is, with most addicts that I talk to, we, for so many years, would think through an entire conversation before we had a conversation. We would think through the entire day before we went through the day. And we got really good at predicting what everybody else would see or think or act or respond with. And therefore, you see a lot of addicts that are very successful. I mean, look at Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy. I mean, he made those pillows high on crack. He was a crackhead for 26 years. He's got a book, you know, From Crackhead to CEO, that just goes, wow, like, how in the world? You know, but God stepped in and reached him, and finally he surrendered and gave up the control, and look at his life now. It's turned into a pretty beautiful piece of artwork that that God has allowed to happen in his life. And so I read books like that inspire me, and also they intrigue me, as you said there, Carrie, that, wow, you know, there's a lot of people that can do that. And I was talking to a friend of mine that's a doctor. And I said, yeah, you know, construction, you know, drugs run rampant. And he goes, you think it does in construction? Talk about the medical field. And I'm like, thinking, like, are you serious? He goes, oh, yeah. nurses, doctors. Like, I never even had thought about that being in construction all my life. But yeah, you get to the point, and whether it's, the stockbroker example of doing cocaine, or it's the difference. So I think in every industry, it's there. I think, it is amazing how, some of us could hide it for years, but at some point it always comes out because it needs to for healing. It's we're gonna have we need to hit that rock bottom. We need to get out of the denial phase. And a lot of times it comes with a family intervention and people going, hey, you might think you're fine, but you're not. But that usually doesn't work until the person is actually going, yes, I am okay. I
100%.
accept it. I'm not in denial and I'm ready to change. There's that saying, nobody can hope or wish or want or beg somebody else to get sober. That person has to finally go, I'm done. And don't get me wrong, God is a miracle worker and does so much, but he does give us choices. He does give us the daily choice on everything we do. But in that process, God was always talking to me every day, every time I'd reach out, and sometimes in my car, sometimes in the bushes, sometimes in the shower. But the amazing part was he kept telling me, you're great. You're good. I got you, Tom. Just go talk to your wife. Just go talk to your wife. Just go talk to your wife. And that was the hardest part. So I'm like, I can't. I mean, she's never drank in her life. I'm talking zilch. She's never done drugs. I mean, she's been that lady that's, I'm not saying she's perfect, but she's never done drugs and alcohol. She's never been unfaithful. And I'm going to go and tell her all this. You got to be kidding me. Like, let me just lie and fake it until the kids are moved out. And then maybe that time will be better because, the kids then will have their own life and it won't be so devastating. And so I was so afraid. And so every week, especially Sundays, God would talk to me and I'd be convinced I was going to go home. And once the kids were asleep or whatever, I'd sit my wife down and tell her everything. And I never did. And so the only thing that made it feel better because I wouldn't tell her is to do it again. When I say do it, it's all of the above, and there's times, I mean, I might make it half a day with nothing. And then I'm, grabbing the steroids and poking myself and snorting a line and chugging a half a bottle of whiskey all within 10 minutes. And then going to meeting the girlfriend or whatever. And so it's crazy to think how fast a life can change one way or the other based on getting out of denial and accepting, like, I need help and I'm a mess. And now, how do I get help? Well, I ask for help. And there's so many resources just at our fingertips, from rehab, inpatient, outpatient, NA, AA, the 12-step programs are wonderful. Celebrate Recovery, a 12-step program's awesome. I do other ones called Genesis, Navigate, and there's just so many options. And then you've got your counseling, and then you've got your friends. And but a lot of times you got to change your circle. If your circle has been around a lot of users or
Big
people
one.
that are still, maybe they're functional alcoholics and it's not a problem, or they're social drinkers and it's not a problem, is what I mean. But nonetheless, especially that first month or two, how can I say I'm going to quit drinking, although I've done it for most of my life, but I'm going to hang out with people that drink every day? That's borderline impossible, which leads me into the cell phone addiction that is so rampant in our world. And when somebody does say, I'm going to take a social media break, or I'm going to reduce my screen time, but they're still around their family, their friends, their connections, their community that are saturated in it. And you think of, especially for teenagers, how hard that is to say, you know what? I realize the issue. I'm spending 12 hours a day on the phone. I realize I have anxiety, depression, and I realize that this amount of screen time is killing me and my mental health. And so I'm going to stop. I'm going to take a break. And they have the best intentions. But then the next day, the next week, they're at school, they're at college, they're around others, and everybody's on their phone. And so you're around users nonstop. And I'm more and more fascinated with that as I get into what's going on in our world with mental health struggles and the amount of screen time being a huge contributor to that issue. And I think that would be like me quitting cocaine, but still 10 hours a day hanging out with people that are right there putting cocaine on the table. Like, that's impossible. So fascinated, a little bit off topic there, but I'm fascinated by my journey and is still my ongoing journey. I finally kicked Red Bulls and energy drinks about 6 months ago. I was drinking
That's a good
still
one.
three or four a day, and like, God, this has got to go. And now I've stopped that one. but I don't think I'll ever stop coffee. Gotta have my coffee.
That's it's interesting because again, I come from a very addictive family. Like they're that personality, like, and there's always something that replaces it almost. Like, so, you know, it's funny that you say energy drinks and stuff, because there was a time where it's like, oh, I'm just going to have one energy drink. And then like that goes to having another one and another one and another one. And just like alcohol or whatever it is that you're doing, like it ramps up and it almost replaces that void that you subconsciously have in you. And so throughout my life, there's always been something that's kind of replaced it. And like you hit that, and I don't know how it is with you, but there's always that point where I recognize it. And I'm like, okay, this has gotten to a point where we need to cut it out. We can't do this. And we just need to quit it cold turkey. And I'm with you with the coffee, like that one, like that's never going away. But I mean, I guess even like running, like for me now, like that's kind of replaced, you know, that addictive need for something. But yeah, like that's the biggest thing with me is like, there's always something that's obviously not as severe as alcohol or drugs or anything like that, but that replaces it. And I always hit that point where I'm just like, stop, think about how much you're taking in, or like how much you're doing, even with cell phones too. And it's time to pull it back and refocus your energy.
Mm-hmm. You know, the running and healthy, you know, exercise though, yes, we need to be balanced and not take things to an extreme if it's damaging other areas, you know, our relationship areas with others or things like that. But I'm working on in my life time blocking. You know, I never lived by a schedule or a budget my entire life. I just worked more hours, made more money, and dug myself out of any sort of financial issue by working more. So I didn't really grow up doing schedules and budgets for myself personally. For the company, yeah, but for personally, I didn't. And so now I'm into the, okay, let's time block. So if I do get up at 4:30, which I don't always, but I love it when I do. And even 5 a.m. is awesome. I get so much done in the mornings. But there's been many times in my life where I let that slip and all of a sudden it's 7. You know, I work for myself, so it's not like I'm going to get fired if I go to the office late, but I get up at 7 or 7:30 and now my entire day is thrown off and I'm trying to play catch up. And so I'm actually dealing with internal anger issues because I'm angry at myself for not having discipline. And so now I'm mad during traffic. I'm angry at other people, but really I'm angry at myself because the night before I said I was going to get up at 5 a.m. and I didn't. And I got up at 7 or 7:30. So I lost two and a half hours of that quiet, precious time of meditation and reading and exercise. And so I'm out of whack. And so then I think it comes to self-medicating where, you know, I get home, I'm had a rough day, angry at everybody, mainly myself. And so now I'm just going to sit here and scroll. I'm just gonna, you know, scroll through my phone, and now I'm addicted to that. And but habits and discipline, especially in the morning, I have found when I'm on track, they give me a lot of peace, they give me a lot of confidence, and say, you know, yeah, I spent an hour and a half at the gym, but I did it before my kids were awake. I didn't take away from any of my company time or anybody else because I would have been sleeping anyhow. So I got to be addicted to the gym for an hour and a half, 5 days this week. And I feel so good because I did that in the early morning. And balance of how we use our time. Mm-hmm. And then awareness or thoughtfulness of what are we addicted to and why.
Yep, 100%. I completely agree with you on that. And it's interesting that you're like, you said what you did about if you sleep in and you're frustrated with yourself. Because I'm the same way. I'm 4:30 a.m. is when I get up. That is, I get up at 4:30 a.m. every day. And if I sleep in, like even a half an hour later, my entire day is thrown off. Everything is wrong. And it's so hard to get back into a cycle and just a rhythm for the day. Everything, it festers as the day goes on. And again, it affects my mood. It affects how I interact with people. It affects when I'm dealing with everyday stuff at work. and something that's really minuscule and shouldn't even be something that I should be irritated with is way bigger than it should be. So it is really important to have those habits in place that kind of set you up for success for the day and give you that time and that little pocket of mm-hmm. time where you can kind of just get yourself into a zen, get yourself focused, get yourself ready for the day. And that's for you. And I, you know, as a mom, that's a huge priority for me is I want to make sure that I'm present for my daughter. Like I always want to make sure that whatever she wants to do, whatever it is that she's got in her head that she wants, I want to be there to try and make that happen for her. And I don't want running or whatever else it is that's going on in my world to affect what it is that she wants to do. And that's something that I've, again, had to kind of hyper-focus and be like, all right, we need to restructure my day so that my running and all that stuff that I want to do for myself, which is important. It's absolutely vital for me to like get my zen on and refocus my energies and be, because running always is just my time to clear my head and to go through all my thoughts and process any emotions that I have. And it's vital for me to be a successful mom for her, to give her the energy that she needs in order to do what she wants to do. So knowing that, it's, you know, making sure that I'm giving myself that time, but also not letting it affect her too. So it's been a balance, and it's been mm-hmm. something, again, that I've had to like refocus my energy and be like, wait a minute, we need to adjust and make it work.
I also like the point you brought up about, I think like knowing your why you're doing it is important too. Cause the way you just framed it, like you always hear about people being addicted to the phones, but when you're just talking about it now, it really like hit home that's like a new technology. That's like something new that people get that are addicted to that wouldn't have been like years ago. So there's a reason why the families are eating and everybody's like looking at their phones or even at home.
The crazy part about it is that 99% of the things that we scroll at like have no value whatsoever. Like the stuff mm-hmm. that you're looking at and the stuff that you're scrolling through. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I've had those moments where I'm just like, I'll be scrolling and watching videos and I'll be like, why am I even watching? Why is this something that I even find interesting or something that I'm actually giving time out of my day for to watch? So if you look at what it is that you're actually watching and scrolling through, it's nothing. It's just, it's crap, really. Like, yeah. It's like, there's no value to it. There's no educational or forward thinking or giving you perspective on anything. Like, it's just, it's crap that you're watching. Yeah, and it's weird to the society that we live in that like everybody has this need to be scrolling or posting about everything that they're doing in their lives. And I don't know, I could go down like a rabbit hole of.
Well, it's the same thing with like food too. You could just be eating literal crap just for, you know, mindlessly eating. That's another addiction that. So it's a topic. Yeah, I guess we can get back to your story. So eventually you must have hit bottom because you're doing great now. So was it dependent or you just, because when you were younger, you stopped, you just felt like it was, it just didn't feel right to you. I feel like some kind of seed was planted in you back then and now did it just like come back to you eventually?
Right. Thank you, Paul. And I do want to, on another episode, dive more into the cell phone discussion. I do enjoy this. I know today we're not going to have that time, but I would love and be honored to talk to you both about that more. We've got some things we're working on up here mm-hmm. that I believe can really help families and individuals with controlling the phone time. But yeah, as far as my journey, when I was 22 years old, I'll never forget, I was writing down, I do a lot of writing of my goals each day. And so I was writing down, you know, pay this bill, okay, after work, make this phone call. And I think the pen jumped or I made it jump or I don't know, but it went up to the top in real big letters and just said, I need God in my life. And so 22 years old, out of balance, financially successful, but empty in so many other areas, that happened at 22 years old. At 39 years old was probably my worst year. Steroids, alcohol, cocaine, all of it. My dad had cancer. I was turning 40, midlife crisis. I could tell that things were going to explode, and I didn't know how, and I was scared. And I was running from my own self so fast that at some point, either my wife's going to find out the ultimate worst thing that I've done, being unfaithful to her, and she's going to leave for sure. That's just a guarantee. There's no option. I know she's going to. And so I'm running, not knowing how this is ever going to come out, but knowing because my sleep is so interrupted, I can't make eye contact with myself. I'm doing cocaine during the day and I'm taking a dozen melatonin at night and I'm getting like 3 horrible hours of sleep at the most. And I get up and the only way is just, okay, where's my cocaine? Let's go. And so I'm running fast and still, you know, have a lot of people looking to me for direction at the job sites and of course at the house and responsibilities and duties. And so I think I was about 41 years old. Dad had passed away. And I went and I think it was about 40, told my wife everything. And we start going to counseling and it's crazy. For a few months there, it didn't look like it was going to work. So I told her most everything, not the details, but the big things. And we started doing counseling and I stopped the drugs and the relationships and I made it a little while and went to rehab for 30 days all the way in North Carolina. My brother-in-law lived over there. And so I went over to his house and detoxed for a week or so and then checked myself in for 30 days to inpatient. And the whole time during that, I'm like, even though I get clean and sober, she's not going to stay with me. It didn't look like it. I mean, she was, but I didn't think that there was any chance it would work. And even if it did, I just figured we'd coexist and it would be a lame marriage the rest of my life. And just how's that going to unfold? You know, how are we going to get through it and have an enjoyable life with the fact that I've betrayed her over and over and all that's gone on? Now I've told her all this. And, you know, the night I told her most of it, or the initial day of revelation, I slept like a baby and she was up all night in turmoil. And that went on for months and months. And so she went to her own counseling. I went to my own counseling. I walked out of many, many sessions. Just, it was a mess for, I don't know, a year. But I did get clean. And I was 41 years old, I think, at the time there. And maybe 42. And I came back from North Carolina. And no more relationships with others. No more drugs and alcohol. I made it, I think, 8 months, and then just had a beer and relapsed and kept going. And then the cocaine, and then she found out. And at that point, she's like, all right, well, we were going to make it, but not now, because with what you're doing, it's going to be another female. And if that happens again, there's no way. She said, I told you, and I'm still here, and told you we'd make it through this main initial first time, but you do that again, and there's no way. And so months go by and I'm like, no, that's not happening. No, I'm just drinking. I'm just struggling. But I only do it at the house. You know, I only do it when I'm home and all that stuff. And it was one day she was standing in the garage and she looked at me and she said, I do love you, the real you, but you're not here. This isn't you. And next week I'm leaving. I've called the attorney. The kids and I are gone. You will never see us again. I tried. I'm done. I love you. Bye. And it clicked. And it was hell. You know, I went to my mom's, detoxed, you know, had the shakes, sick, couldn't go to hear my kids play their instruments at the Christmas church pageant, Christmas event. And I'm like, it's over. I couldn't do it. I had that one chance and I screwed it up. And I don't know. I went down to the outpatient program here in Auburn, Washington, and checked myself in, wrote a check for 10 grand and signed up for 3 hours a day, 3 days a week for 3 months, right in the middle of the day. I'm still working. I'm still going and paying the bills and going to work and all those things. You know, I'm not like incapable of doing my daily duties. You know, I'm not that messed up, but Yeah. So they have an abstinence program where you cannot have anything. I mean, they will P-test you every time you go in there. No marijuana, which is what held me back last time. When I got out of inpatient, I was supposed to go right to outpatient, and I didn't because they're like, well, you can't have marijuana, and you can't even have NyQuil or melatonin or anything. I'm like, what a joke. So this time I did it. So 26 months ago, it was December 12th, 2021, wrote the check, signed up, and I've been 100% clean and sober ever since. And no turning back. I get stronger each day because I talk about it each day. Everything in every bit of my speech with everybody I meet, and when I talk to them, it's jumping right into, you know, hey, can I give you one of these? And well, what's this? Well, I'll talk about this. It's an event. It's happy hour for the whole family. It's creating a culture of connection. You know, I got out of rehab and I still want to meet people. I still want to party. So we call it joy hour instead of happy hour. And then for those that are curious, they keep asking questions. I keep telling them more. I show them my picture, my worst one, and of course, my best one now. And I start telling them my story and being vulnerable and open. So my strength has really come, of course, from above. But my strength has also come from telling my story every single day. And some weeks that's 10 people, and some weeks it's 100. But I do everything I can to talk exactly about the pain and what I went through. And then the best part of it is that's just a miracle as well, is that my wife is now a counselor, and she works with women all over the country. It's called Betrayed Wives. So she's on her way to her doctorate degree, but she's very open with our story. And she does work with a lot of ladies on that topic specifically and how she got through it. But yeah, 26 months ago, standing in the garage, I knew that the most beautiful thing in my life, other than God and my kids, you know, my wife, loved me, but not that me. And I didn't love that me either. Like I said, I couldn't look in the mirror. I couldn't look in my own eyes. I didn't love Tom. And so there's a saying in rehab is, why would I quit? Why would I lose everything for that one thing when I can quit that one thing and keep everything? And that's how powerful, you know, white powder is, or alcohol is, or any other drug or anything that's going to kill you. You know, I tell people, you know, sugar will kill you, not as fast as fentanyl, but it will. I mean, pornography will, casinos will, these things will kill you. Yep. Just a matter of at what rate. And so when you hit that rock bottom, because usually a loved one, like a wife or a mom, says, I'm done. Mm-hmm. And you're like, whoa, they're serious. And then that's usually what it takes for. Took for me.
Yep.
She's amazing because, first of all, for staying with you, but also at the same time not enabling you either, because a lot of times they'll enable the user and everything. But the way she like stood by you, and then when she was going to leave and woke you up, she did it in a really, that's like a perfect way. So that's so incredible. So yeah, definitely kudos to her.
Yeah, no, it's a lot. And I remember my mom, when she was going through, her boyfriend that she had been with for years and years and years and years was a alcoholic and functional alcoholic for years and years and years, was able to, my background is restaurant life. Like that's where like we existed, and just like with medical field and construction, like drugs and alcohol are rampant in that environment. Like it's, can think of a couple of Christmas parties that it's surprising that we're all still kicking it. But I remember when my mom, again, she was an addict, went through the program, oddly enough, not because of starting off with drinking or starting off with just occasional drug use or whatever, but had a blown disc in her back, and the doctor ended up prescribing her oxys, and that turned into somehow methadone. Like somehow the doctor got her to methadone, and then from there it was just like the addiction just like spun out of control. And I can remember growing up and her accusing my brothers of taking her meds from her, which we didn't. It was just her that had taken it and not remembered that she had taken it. And I remember her going through the program And I remember taking her to all of her counseling programs and going through counseling with her. I remember her relapses that she had and going through that. I remember her going through ovarian cancer and not wanting to take any of the pain medication because she knew that those hardcore medicines, as much as it was going to help with the pain, was going to send her down a road that she didn't want to go down. But her boyfriend was a functional alcoholic and was able to do his job, do everything that he needed to do. And they moved to Florida. So they moved away from family and went down to live the dream of living in Florida. And he got to the point where he was lying to her and saying that he was going to work and wasn't going to the work. He was going to the beach and drinking all day long and then coming home. And eventually that caught up with him, and she found all of his vodka bottles and lined them all up in a row and said, I can't do this. Like, I can't, like, with my past and everything that I've been through, I cannot put myself into this situation. She's like, I love you. I will always love you, but this can't be it. And I understand that you have to be ready to do it for yourself. Like, you have to be able to cut the tie with that and get the help that you need. And so she ended up coming back up north. He stayed in Florida, and 3 years later, he was able to finally get himself to a point of getting clean because he realized that she was his world and that she missed him. And he did the work. He put the work in. He got clean. He got sober. And he came back up north and reached out to her. And they had a couple of meetings. And she gave her his time, gave him time to say what he needed to say. And she told him what, you know, her feelings were and her concerns, and that they were going to take it slow. And they ended up back together again. And he's been sober since. He's been sober, gosh, at least 8-9 years now. And I'm so proud of him because he lost her in 2019 to ovarian cancer. And he lost my grandmother in 2021 to old age, but he took care of them when they were sick. And I was so convinced that he was going to relapse because I know my whole world was crumbled. And for him to have that be his entire existence, I was like, this is going to be devastating for him. And I'm so proud of him because he has worked hard to make sure he's healthy and make sure that he is doing the steps that he needs to do to stay sober. And just continuing to live his life the way that my mom would want him to be doing. And so it really comes down to, you have to hit that point of, I want to change. Like, I love the people that I love, and I need to do this. And that's the moment that change starts to happen.
That's awesome. And I hope that he hears this recording and sees your admiration for him. I don't know him, but I'm proud of him. And every day it's a choice. And when these life crises come in, the older we get, the more we're going to experience. But when they come in, I always tell people, like, it's not if, it's when. Mm-hmm. And are you ready for it? You know, I lost my dad, of course, as I mentioned. I have a wonderful mom. But I'm thinking, like, when that day comes, am I ready for that? You know, if the economy gets bad and I go bankrupt, am I ready for that? You know, if a health situation comes in, am I ready for that? And so I think the gentleman you're talking about there probably does like I do. And we go to meetings when we don't feel like we need to go to meetings. And we read books when we don't really feel like we need the book. We're fine. We're good. We don't need to go sit in a circle of people and say, hey, I'm Tom. I'm in recovery from addiction. And, you know, admit everything or talk about everything. But it helps. There's a lot of strength in those circles, those programs and 12 steps where, you brace yourself before the event to then be strong enough to make it through the event.
Mm-hmm.
And I was drinking long before my dad passed. But man, when he did, it got real dark real fast. I remember sitting at the cemetery 100 times, drugging, drinking, yelling at God, just out of control.
Mm-hmm.
I was nowhere close to ready to lose him. And so I'll send up prayers and encouragement for him. And thank you for sharing those what I call praise reports of victories. You know, we're not a current addict, but we are always making daily choices.
Yep, 100%.
Putting in the work. Or they say, if it works if you work it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these meetings I go to, I drive a half hour, I get there, and there's three people, and it's an hour, and I come back. I'm like, I didn't really feel like that was going to like change my life. But ultimately, it gives me the strength for what happens that next day that I didn't see coming.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I really wanted to get into this joy hour that you started to. It's so incredible. So could you like describe that for the listeners?
Sure. And yeah. Can you see the card okay there?
It's a little bit. It's got a little bit of brightness in the light.
All right. So this card started it all pretty much. Same cards that we hand out all the time. Nice. And so I was 3 months clean and sober, laying in bed one night, and I got this song in my head. I got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart, you know, a little Sunday school song. And I'm not the singer in the family. My wife is, and my kids are. And she's kind of looking at me like, are you high again? Why are you singing? Like, what's going on? Did you have a drink? But no, I had this joy. So a couple things happened within about 5 minutes. Basically, I was singing that song, and then I thought about happiness versus joy. Money buys happiness. Joy is free. How do I have joy? And I want to keep this joy, and I don't want to relapse. And I'm doing meetings, AA and NA and cool, celebrate recovery, great. I go to church, great. But hey, what did I like about happy hours and parties? People, right? I love meeting people. I enjoy, you know, shooting hoops or shooting a pool or playing ping pong. And so we brought those three things actually to my shop. Brought a pool table, a ping pong table, and an outdoor basketball hoop. And 30 people showed up. And we had a great time. So we said, let's do it next week. 71 people. Third week, 107 people, which was my 107th sober day. And I'm like, okay, that's
crazy.
Right? I need those number confirmations. And so then by the fourth week, there was 160 and then 200. And we've had 70 events and almost 10,000 different people have come through this Joy Hour environment. And so I tell people Joy Hour is simply creating a culture of connection in your community. I'd like to see these start all over the world. The whole world's got happy hour. I'd like to see joy hours all over the world. So far, there's two in Washington, one in Michigan, and hopefully soon one in West Virginia. But anybody that wants to start one, it's a pretty simple concept. It does take a lot of work, a lot of finances, a lot of volunteer hours. We have put in thousands of hours and tens of thousands of dollars into this. But we are very thankful to be able to, basically, it's a four-hour party. So we did every Wednesday for 14 months. We had a building. Our landlord then reminded me I rented the building for construction and not a rec center. So we had to shut it down. We went to the park once a month for 7 months. And now last month we signed a lease actually at the Junior Achievement Building, which they are actually a worldwide nonprofit. And so is the YMCA, and we're on their property too. So we are collaborating with Junior Achievement and hopefully soon the YMCA. And once a month, we set up everything in their building and we party for 4 hours, 5 hours. But it's everything from pool, ping pong, bouncy houses, arts and crafts, bingo, board games, anything. And for all ages. So some people think, oh, it's for kids. Absolutely. And I also see adults in the bouncy house and I see adults playing bingo, and it's for all ages. And we live in a very diverse part of the country, which I absolutely love. I'll look around at 100 people and there's 80 different nationalities and there's every age you can think of. It's beautiful. And the biggest thing I've seen out of 70 events and talking to every single person, the common thread is it's 4 hours where they don't even want to be on this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for some of us, it's a sober happy hour. That's how it started. That was the intent. But for majority of everybody, it's a four-hour break from your phone. It's a 4 hour break from the video games your kids would be begging to play if they were at their house. And so we get home and we fall into these ruts, and you know, the parents are on their phone, the kids are on their Xbox, and then everybody's eating food, but they're not at the dinner table having eye contact saying, how was your day, sweetie? Hey, young man, you're handsome. Hey, you can be an astronaut. And they're not speaking into their kids' lives because they're stuck on their phone. And I'm speaking from experience here. Yeah. I've done this for too many years where I'm tired, it's late, and I'm looking at my phone. But man, you get in an environment like this, and next thing you know, you're doing a puzzle with your kid, and you're like, I forgot I even had a phone. It's just something about the environment that's created in the Joy Hour movement is a there's no screens and distractions like that. Obviously, it's sobriety, but there's real connections with real conversations. It's helped a lot with mental health challenges. Actually, last week I had a rough few days and I reached out, just something different I hadn't done, but I just went ahead and got real and got live on Facebook and said, I'm having a rough few days. My phone blew up from some people from the Joy Hour movement, and just said, I love you. I'm here for you. Where are you at? Let's meet. And so we've created a culture of connection in our community that is about real talk and real life and real struggles that we all face, from the cell phone addiction to the alcohol, to the food addictions, to the, hey, I want to go on a hike more often, but I don't because I'm so tired. Well, let's look at your phone time. Well, if you spend 14 yeah. hours a day on your phone, you're not going to have any energy to go on a hike. So let's That's meet on Saturday and let's go for a hike. Yep. And next thing you know, you're creating new ruts, new habits. So no bad habit just stops. Bad habits need to be replaced with good habits. And so in all of this 4 or 5 hours of a party called Joy Hour, the bond and the ties that are happening in our in the relationships, people are really exchanging phone numbers. People are really remembering names. You know, you think about happy hour and it's, hey, bro, I love you. How you doing? Big hug, man. We're your best friends. I'll call you tomorrow. We'll get together on Saturday. And, you know, you wake up the next day. You're like, who did I even talk to? And so it doesn't always happen, but that's what I remember happening in my life. So the Joy Hour is where you develop relationships that truly you do follow up. And the next day you do go, you know, I met Joe and I had a good talk with Joe. And Joe said he struggles on Saturdays. I'm going to call Joe and just tell him hello. And Joe, how you doing, man? Good to meet you last mm-hmm. week. What are you doing today? You want to meet up? That might have saved Joe's life. Yeah. There's way too many suicides. There's way too many times where people are just lonely and they feel desperate and tired and exhausted and lonely. And they pop a pill or they take something and they didn't know what was in it. Now they're not here, but really they just wanted to go outside. They wanted to go on a walk. They wanted to do something with another person. They wanted to feel like they belonged and had purpose and had value. And that's what we do in this environment is just, you know, nobody should feel alone. Everybody should feel loved. I don't like that our world has created so many walls of isolation, whether it's race or whether it's financial status or whether it's your intelligence, you know, compared to each other, that whole thing of, you know, hey, what do you do for a living? Well, why is that the first question? Like, come on. Like, does that really matter? Like what my bank account is or what I do for a living? How about starting out with, hey, what's your favorite hobby? Mm-hmm. You know, hey, how's your mental health? How you doing, bro? I love you. I see you. I recognize you and you're important to me. Why? Because you are. And so that's the environment that has been created. And then out of that, you know, if somebody at the event has shared openly with me or someone about struggles, well, then we offer our behavioral changes programs. Like we do anger management right now every Monday night. We got a couple more weeks on that. And then we switch back over to a drug and alcohol, a cognitive life skills, parenting, financial literacy. There's youth programs. So we're doing more with that. It's called NCTI. It's a great curriculum, National Curriculum Training Institute. It's been around 41 years. But we offer these sit down, kind of what it reminds me of is kind of like I did in rehab. It's kind of rehabbing yourself before you need rehab. Mm-hmm. It's okay, I have road rage and I'm tired of being this way to everybody in the world. Like, let me work on my anger issues. And so you get into these books, you got your pencil and you sit at a table with other adults and you work through these programs. And it's pretty amazing, not just the program, but the conversations that happen in the parking lot afterwards. And so it's a little different than the 12 step. You know, like I say, I do all of them throughout the week, but the NCTI Behavioral Changes Program has helped a lot of people, both with sobriety, with rebalancing their life, their screen time, with their anger and how they interact with their family behind closed doors. You know, I know a lot of dads that are like, you know, I'm not happy with the way I, you know, raise my voice. I'm not happy with the way I punch holes in the wall. Hey, that's not who I want to be. And they're not bad people. They're just having a bad time and they need to work through those things. So I'm actually in the anger management class. I'm a student. My brother-in-law is the teacher. But I'm always learning. Yeah. This Joy Hour just gives us an opportunity. When I give it to some people, all I say is it's bouncy houses and free food. Come check it out. And I've not seen one person ever say, I'm not coming back. Like, it's very unique. And so, yeah, any questions at all? I hope that clarified a lot. There's a group that has partnered with us, Mission Outdoors. They've been around for 7 years, but their motto is Hope Grows Outdoors. They specifically do a ton of activities with veterans and active military, from fishing to clam digging to hiking to camping to skiing. They do a lot with veterans and active military with the outdoor mentality of finding hope. And, you know, another way to say Joy Hour and even Mission Outdoors is it's overdose and suicide prevention. Mm-hmm. Want to cut to the chase what we're trying to do for each other and let each other know how valuable life is and how precious it is to have real conversations. You know, being a man in construction all my life, it breaks my heart when I'll hear somebody say, man, you know, I lost my best friend a few years ago. I had no idea he was struggling. And I'm thinking, if he was your best friend, how did you have no idea he was struggling? Well, if all you do is talk about sports and politics and the economy and the weather, you might think you're best friends, but mm-hmm. you need to know if he's struggling. You know, we've all seen the image of Robin Williams. This is what depression looks like. You know, shame on us. Shame on us for not going, hey, I see you, bro. How you doing? Come on. Come on. Here you go. Here's a hug. I love you. And, you know, when he's down, I'm up. And hopefully next week, if I'm down, he's up. But it's just something that I'm trying my best in my environment, people I meet, to say, I'll be that guy. And I'll be that guy that says, hey, I'm struggling today. And, yeah, I need a hug. And I'll cry. And it's been healing. And then others, they start to feel safe in saying it's okay to be successful in business and be a tough, you know, alpha male and all that. But, you know, in the right circle to say, hey, I'm struggling massively with self-worth or with depression or with anxiety and whatever it is. And, you know, I'm more vocal out to everyone. What I find by doing that is, a lot of times it opens doors where certain men will feel comfortable at least one-on-one, and that's fine. As long as you got one, you know, if you got a squad, like that's why in the military, you got four guys or eight guys or women, you know, you got a clique, you got a unit, you got a squad is I'll die for you. I'll take a bullet for you. Well, we're supposed to be like that in our every day-to-day life, but it's hard to get that if you're just at a happy hour or a club or a party and you're intoxicated. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
those close communities are so important to allow, like, for what you're doing and being so open about your story and, you know, the journey that you've been on. That is so comforting to so many people, because so many people stay quiet until they have that one person that is willing to open up and say, hey, this is what I experienced. You know, it sucked, and it still mm-hmm. sucks sometimes. And I still misstep, and I still, you know, have my own issues that I'm still processing. And for people to hear that, it's enough for them to be able to relate to you and open up to you and talk about what's going on with them. They don't feel alone anymore. Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of people, they see success stories and they see the people that have made it through, and they're like, oh, I can't get to that point. There's no way. They don't realize that there's still so much work that's happening behind the scenes that they don't see every day, right? They don't necessarily see that you're struggling for half of the day or a couple of days, you know? And so for you to be able to be open and honest and be like, I'm having a really tough couple of days, and that's okay. We're going to get it through. And I want to voice that and vocalize that, allows other people to understand that it's okay. And you are going to be okay. And if you need somebody to relate to you and talk to you, I'm here for you. And I understand what you're going through. I'm here to listen. I'm here for whatever it is that you need.
And, you know, something comes to mind on that is your circle. You know, it's a big population. I love everybody. But not everybody ends up being in the same circle of intimate, mm-hmm. close relationships, not even sometimes your own blood relatives, right? Mm-hmm. But when you truly step out on faith and say, I'm just going to be Tom, mm-hmm. you know what it actually does? It naturally creates your circle.
Exactly.
Yep.
Like, I'm not trying to offend anybody. I'm not trying to be over the top and, you know, rude or in your business at all. I'm not, but as far as when I'm in my day-to-day life, I'm going to have conversations about mental health before I'm going to talk about the touchdown last night or the home run. Sorry, that's who I am. And I think it's time that more and more, there's a time and place for everything. I get that. Hey, if it was a great touchdown, let's talk about it.
Right.
But, and more importantly, like to know that I left a conversation with that man or woman going, I felt safe. And the next time that they do have that bad day, they can text, they can call, they can say, something you said inspired me to reach out and I'm just having a bad moment. And hey, then what do? You meet, you talk, you laugh together, you cry together, but it's needed. I think the time is ripe, after COVID, we've all seen what isolation does. Mm-hmm. I don't care how much money's in your bank. I don't care how many cars are in your driveway. When it gets dark and ugly and you're alone and you're going, for what? Mm-hmm. How many multimillionaires have got to the end of their life going, well, that wasn't what I was trying to do. I isolated myself so much that all I have is my bank account. I don't want to be that guy. I want to be able to say, if I am told like my dad that I have 3 months to live, I'm just going to be on the phone with 100 people talking until I pass away and sharing laughs and tears together. And that relationship, that's what we're going to want, is one more day with our son or daughter, one more day with our friend, one more conversation with someone. So if that's what I'm going to be wanting, if and when I'm told I have 3 months to live, then why don't I live like that every day? Why do I go home and take my family for granted and stare at my phone all night? Right. It's this. So I spend a lot of time at cemeteries and hospitals and trying to keep myself away from that natural habit of going, oh, my goodness, I'm spending 9 hours a day on my phone again. And I'm, don't even know how my daughter's doing. Mm-hmm. I need to know, and I need to be there for her and being present, like you said, Carrie, with our children. It takes being intentional and having these conversations of, if I don't have the bandwidth to know everything that's going on in the economy or in the sporting world, but I do have the bandwidth to know the mental health of my daughter or my son, mm-hmm. then I feel like I'm being a good father. But I'm, this is all stuff I'm working on. This isn't like I've arrived. And right. That's something too, I think so important with being vocal is, yes, I'm a Christian, but does that mean I've arrived? No, I'm just falling down and getting up. Mm-hmm. I'm falling down and getting up over and over again. That's why when I leave the studio, I'm going right to an afternoon church service. I'm getting myself fixed again. Yeah. And so I share that with people when they start talking about, religion or their different views on things like that. It's like, I don't think that you ever arrive or get perfect or, arrive at being success and everything's in perfect balance. I think it's this constant I'm out of whack here. Oh, my health. Yep. Oh. My spirit, my body, my hobbies. Oh, where's my hobbies? I don't have any hobbies, And so we're constantly juggling. And I think admitting weakness has been one of the best and strongest things I've done in my life. Saying, hey, I need help in this area. Mm-hmm. I'm out of balance. I need help. And then I go find a mentor that's specifically a mentor for fitness. And I find another one that's specifically a mentor for spiritual areas. And, I have them speak into my life.
Mm-hmm. I 100% agree.
It's a journey.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and with the world is so crazy, so much division and hatred, but what you're doing is all about unity and love, and that's what makes us stronger. And yeah, just loving on each other and helping each other out. It's beautiful. Yeah. All right, yeah, maybe we should start circling the wagon, so to speak.
I was wondering about that.
We could go forever. This has been awesome.
Part one.
Right, exactly. So I've missed the past couple of weeks, so I really want to bring up the our 22 Too Many veteran.
For any new listeners, 22 Too Many is an awesome organization that brings awareness and remembrance to veterans who die of suicide. And they support prevention as well. The 22 stands for the number of veterans who die from suicide each day. And the reports don't even take into consideration the drug overdoses or accidents that weren't really accidents. So you can follow 22toomany.org. That's the numbers 22 and then TOOmany.org. I'll also add the link in the show notes.
All right, so this week's 22 Too Many veterans in memory of Private Daniel McCoy from the U.S. Army. He was born April 13th, 1993, and passed away on July 10th, 2022. So very recent. And this was submitted by his mother. Daniel is like any human I've ever known. Smart, funny, loving, kind, and edgy. He was a sponge and soaked up information. He was smarter than most. He did life his way, and we respected that so much. He loved hanging with his friends and his dog, taking walks in nature, and being the best comedian and prankster. He enjoyed cooking for his dad. He was big into nature and loved learning. His drawing abilities were astonishing. Artistic, smart, and hilarious are characteristics that describe him so well. He loved his siblings very much. He was a blessing to those who got to know and love him. Yeah, he lived in Illinois and Florida, and he has treasured friends in both places. So, yeah, we were like talking about like Robin Williams with the comedian and everything, and this sounds like he had like a similar personality. Probably nobody probably saw the signs. He was like a comedian and prankster. Everybody loved him, but you never know. So that's why it's important to reach out and keep in touch, make sure everybody's okay. All right, and then this will bring us to everybody's new favorite part of the show, the lightning round.
The lightning round.
I was joking last week because every time he says the lightning round, I don't know if you've ever watched Friends, but like there's the scene where Ross and everybody is doing some kind of a game for where the apartments are going to go, and it's called the lightning round. So whenever Paul says the lightning round, I instantly hear Ross Geller in my head saying the lightning round.
And I don't even know why I call it that. It's not like it's like a speed question, speed answers or anything, but I just like the sound of it.
I majored in lightning rounds. All right.
All right. So, what's the most unexpected thing that has happened to you on your journey, Tom?
My wife, about a year ago, she looked at me after one of our Joy Hour events, and we kind of hugged and got towards the car there, and she said, I wouldn't trade anything in the world for what we've been through. I'm so glad we've been through what we have. And I'm like, what did you say? How does a woman say that, you know? And but yet it has made us who we are, and thankful for that.
Yeah, stronger and yeah, can help other people going through the same thing that where they might not see hope, you give them hope. That's incredible. All right. What's your favorite quote or mantra that keeps you motivated?
As long as there's breath, there's hope.
That's a good one.
Yeah, we were talking on the phone the other day. He said that several times. I love it.
You know, I was talking with a friend about it, and we were talking about where did that quote come from. I'm like, you know, I'm not really sure. And then went ahead to the good old big book, the Bible, and typed in something, and it pulled up. And I didn't know this until recently, but in one of the translations, it says in Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 4, as long as we are alive, we still have hope, just as a live dog is better off than a dead lion. And written by Solomon, of course. And yeah, so a lot of good quotes have come from that book. And then, of course, they can be said in different ways, but I believe that. You know, you look at a life, and it's so easy, especially with a family member, to say, I'm done. It's been 20 years of addiction. It's been 40 years of addiction. There's no hope. There's no hope. And because you've been hurt so many times by that person or family member, and yeah, you love the real them, and you just want the real them back. But I do believe as long as there's breath, there is hope.
You're definitely living proof of that.
Yeah.
Well, I guess suppose we all are.
Yeah, exactly. That's the idea. I'm not trying to be better than each other, just better than not we were yesterday.
Exactly.
And yeah, ourselves, yeah.
All right. If you could sum up in one sentence, or I might add a sentence or a phrase, what do you think got you where you want to be, and what would you say?
Surrendering, getting out of denial, asking for help, and really working the steps as I listen to his voice. And that could be called your conscience. That could be called a lot of things. But when I just took it step by step and one day at a time, instead of being overwhelmed, like I got to fix my entire marriage and all the mess that I made. And it's so overwhelming that then a lot of times I used to relapse. But this last time I just said one, and I have a wristband that says one day at a time, but I look at that so often and say 1 hour. I can make good choices as a dad and a husband for one more hour. If I can get in my car from work and I can go home to my family instead of the places I used to go, I can do it for one more hour. And then again, hearing his guidance and his voice that comes from all different ways. You know, I heard a lot from voices at rehab and voices at counseling and voices from mentors. And that's a long sentence, but that's what I got.
Love it. All right. So, would you like to tell people where they can find you, connect with you? You've had an awesome podcast. I'd love people to check that out as well.
Absolutely. And thank you so much, Paul and Carrie. This has been enjoyable. I'd love to have you on the Joy Hour podcast.
Yeah. I'd love to come on.
So we'll schedule a time for that. But the joyhourpodcast.com. I think you can find it that way. The Considerate Group. So the considerategroup.org is our main website that will lead you to everything that we do as far as the Joy Hour, as far as the behavioral changes programs. We are a 501c3. Now it started as just a personal endeavor for another thing for me to stay sober. And then a few months in, somebody said, oh, you should make it a nonprofit. And so we are, and we're thankful for that. Seeing some support and some donations come in, because we do see this being a lot bigger and helping a lot more communities. So if you're interested in starting one in your community, also get a hold of me directly. Tom Lyman, the Joy Hour guy. You can probably Google that and find me on Facebook or anywhere you want as well. I'm doing my best to get it out there, but the considerategroup.org is the main starting point for the website, and Tom Lyman, the Joy Hour guy.
And then Carrie, would you like to tell people they can contact you?
Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram at running_with_the_rockstar. Again, the rock star in that situation is my daughter, Olivia. I don't consider myself a rock star. It's the antics that we used to do when we were younger. She doesn't do the running as much anymore, but she still participates in shenanigans every once in a while. And then the other place you can find me is Every Run Has a Story on Facebook.
Yep. And then you can find me at The Roadrunner. It's RHODE on Instagram and Facebook. And hopefully, I don't know if it'll, by the time this comes up, I don't know if it'll be up, but I'm creating a website. It's inspiringjourneys.net. .com was already taken. And I created an email address for me. It's paul@inspiringjourneys.net. So yeah, we're going to be like all official and up there. So yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Things are going to get really interesting and big. So thank you so much, Tom, for this. This is incredible. And yeah, we definitely got this, like, so much more I want to talk about. So yeah, we definitely got to do this again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really want to pick your brain about a lot of things. So this would, yeah, it'd be great to have you back. And thank you for what you do. It's incredible. We need more people like you.
Well, likewise, Paul. And thank you so much for reaching out and for this happening today. And Carrie, enjoyed the conversation. And I know one of those topics for sure will be about this thing here. Mm-hmm. We need to have more discussions and bring more awareness to helping families and relationships grow together with real eye contact and real conversations. So this has been great today, and excited to do another one with you soon.
Yeah, I appreciate your time. This has been absolutely The hour and a half flew by. Like, I can't even believe.
Has it been that long? Oh,
yeah.
It's like, what time is it? This has been great. Thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us about your journey. And, you know, there is so much more that we can unpack, and I'm looking forward to those stories and unpacking those with you.
Awesome.
Yes. Thank you. All right. Take care, everybody.
Thanks.
And remember,
be excellent to each other. And party on, dude!